Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month, we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. I hope you're all doing well and avoiding the natural disasters that seem to be surrounding us right now. Today, I wanted to talk a little bit about practicing in everyday life, in other words, in all aspects of living itself. So, you know, sitting practice, relationship, work, etc. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. As much as people want to hear about it, really is a practice that you just get better at as you apply it. If you think that you can't do that, then you won't. But if you begin to apply it and see how it functions, you'll move through the labyrinth of preferences in terms of, you know, what you think practice actually is. So the first thing I wanted to start off with was this word, in the Zen tradition from the Japanese language, the word samu. Some people still use it to replace the word work, and there's some value to that in that there's two implications to the word samu that we don't have in work. You know, quite often work is denigrated as a word. It's not something that maybe we should do. This word samu has two things. The first one is doing nothing, which is kind of interesting. For work. And then the second thing is fulfilling one's obligations. So, you know, that really is an individual thing. You've got to see what that really is. Now, I also wanted to read something from Master Hakoin that also, and I don't often talk from Master Hakoin, and this is what he talks about koan practice in work or daily life. He goes, I am not trying to tell you to discard completely quietistic meditation and to seek specifically for a place of activity to carry on your practice. What is most worthy of respect is pure koan meditation that neither knows nor is conscious of the two aspects, the quiet and the active. This is why it has been said that the true practicing person walks but does not know he is walking, sits but does not know he's sitting. For penetrating to the depths of one's own true self-nature and for attaining vitality, valid on all occasions, nothing can surpass meditation in the midst of activity. And those are encouraging words, you know, definitely. And that is maybe one of the major parts of the Zen tradition, especially since the time of Hyakujo in the 7th century. Whether that is true for everybody, I really don't know. But the main aspect, if I sort of cut to the quick with this, is that meditation is consciousness itself. There's no escape from it. This is functioning 24/7. And it's our beliefs that this is practice and this isn't practice that is the main thing that gets in the way. This is the thing that really needs to be worn out. You know, over and over where someone will, this set of activities isn't practice. Therefore, practice doesn't occur. Rather than, you know, this is living, and this living is a very rare thing. How do I really live to the fullest? How do I really, as Master Hakoin says there, how do I really penetrate into my own nature and to the nature of living in itself. Hakuin says this really nicely, is that occurs no matter what the activity is. You know, that looking into the nature, this is the core of the Zen tradition. It's like when Bodhidharma was alive, he attempted one of the few definitions of the Zen tradition, where he said it's an intimate experience. Let's see, or it's a secret teaching, which really means intimate teaching beyond words and phrases. So it goes beyond those pointers. And he goes, so it's an intimate teaching beyond words and phrases, directly pointing at the mind. Again, that's the teaching part. You know, what is mind? Again, in Buddhism, the mind is the whole shebang. It is the person that sees. It is the vehicle of seeing. It is the object. It is the vehicle of hearing. It is the person that hears and the object. And each one for each of these senses, everything, in other words, everything's included in that. There's no gap, there's no separation within that sphere. And then he says, realizing one's true nature. So directly pointing to the mind. So then you've got to grasp it. It's not just, it lays on the idea of ideas. Then it goes in, and then there is the practice of making real, which is realize, one's own nature. You do that over and over until there isn't a gap. And again, this is the aspect of embodiment that the Zen tradition really shows. And it really, throughout the history, that really has to come forward. It's not, well, now I have it and I have the idea of it, then I just carry this on and I just get about my business. No, the living in itself right now is the way that it's manifested 24/7. So this is where we get to the two aspects of Samu. So the first one, doing nothing. On many levels, you don't have to do anything. You know, consciousness is always like this. It has never been different right through history since beginningless time. And that's where the doing nothing really comes from. It doesn't mean you can't do activities. You can't escape from who and what you are as a human being. But then, you know, most of our work, again, as human beings, is unwinding our own labyrinth of excuses as to why we can't be something like awakened or the one who is responsible for our own practice realization, again, on a momentary basis. So this always should be remembered, this aspect of doing nothing. As you are, this is practice. Practice is going on. You are practice before even consciousness occurred as a kid. As a kid, you're always moving to find out, you know, how to move as a human being. You're watching your environment to imprint on your environment to really learn how to be in that process. You're just doing this and then collating all this information, but it's natural. It's going on 24/7. A friend of mine was telling me that she was with a one-year-old, and this one-year-old had certain preferences, but those preferences were based around the fact that the one-year-old couldn't make a separation from her environment, and when somebody came in with suffering, then it was very difficult for that person and would start to cry simply because directly reflecting what was going on and from other people that were coming around. At some point, we learn to differentiate and we begin to be able to put it out there, which is a very healthy thing for us as human beings. But at the same time, is that then we begin to do that with other aspects of our life. You know, this is the way the world is, and then superimposing a view over the top and then believing in that view. And even if that view is bringing suffering back to us, is that, that view becomes cherished and it becomes embedded. So we also practice in so-called negative ways too. We bring in things that have very little relevance to living in itself. So the majority of the work is looking at these things, seeing what we're bringing into this moment in time, and then attempting, you know, and at first it could be an attempt, almost like trying to grab a sheet of glass, you know, not a broken one, but, you know, just trying to grab it. How do I let go of this? It seems almost impossible. But this is also the practice. It's just don't let these things take root. You know, in the old Zen tradition, they would say this is the sweeping part of practice. See, you're okay right from the beginning. The only problem is these things that we introduce. And as I often say, is that this is the root of the precept, do not be intoxicated. Our worst intoxicants are the ones that we practice, that we introduce on a daily, even a momentary basis. We bring them in and then we look at the world through those rather than directly experiencing the world. So this is that aspect of samu. It's more like doing nothing. Is that, you know, you could say, let these things go. Be that. Now, a lot of people in terms of outside of the Zendo, they allow all of these things back in again, rather than going, well, no, this is consciousness right now. Consciousness is now standing. There's no need for a story in that respect. Consciousness is now, you know, fill in the blank, eating, conscious now working, consciousness is now doing whatever. And doing that, and this practice occurring simply because this is the one who sees through these eyes, hears through these ears. And this practicing then of doing nothing continues endlessly. It doesn't matter what sphere you're in. Now, it's kind of interesting when you watch, or you're, say, in charge of a work crew, for instance, you see all of the human dynamics and all the things that go on. I mean, one of the things of, say, having a work crew at a Zen center is, one, it's not around just doing the work. It's about how do you take this practice or this being into elements of whatever is going on. And so, you know, people have, one, preferences. There's also skill levels. There's also self-doubt, whether people, you know, I can do it or not. Or there's also how I interact as a human being with the rest of the people around. And then the third thing is the absorption into doing whatever is there. Now, a crew leader's job is to really facilitate that absorption rather than allowing the energy to dissipate and to move away. It's to bring that energy in so that people can really reflect off one another with that kind of concentration. And then the crew leader's job then is to fill in the gaps. Wherever that starts, wherever the flow begins to be sort of go against the stream, people start to talk amongst one another, is to bring that energy in, bring the things in that are necessary for that, say, I'm using the technical word samadhi to really come in, or that oneness with whatever he's doing to really come in, and to facilitate that so that when people go back into their so-called daily lives, I mean, everything is daily life, whether you like it or not. But when they go back, they've got this absorption. Now, that absorption doesn't mean, well, you know, like some of the things I've heard from people is, well, I'll never do this when I get back into my daily life. That's not the point. It's not the object that you're doing. You know, there's many things that we do, and we may only do them once or twice in our lives. It's the fact that you face up to something, you just do it, you take care of it, and you see that this is your life at this moment in time. It's like for myself, when I'm doing something that I don't necessarily like, is I always say to myself, you know, this is your life. How are you going to live this? You know, how do you want to live this? And then usually it's like, well, how can I enjoy this? And so then it's then I turn it into an art. How can I do this to the best of my ability? It doesn't matter what. And then whatever occurs, whatever project is assigned to me, is that then I really recognize this is the practice of my life or living at this moment in time. So, you know, this is the function of, say, a Zen center. I mean, a lot of people will come and they'll go, well, you know, why do you do this work? You know, and then, you know, for you around your house, I mean, why do you do that work? You know, the thing is that usually that's what needs to be done. These are the obligations, the second part of this word, samu, that we have. The obligations is that if you live in a place and you are connected to that place in one way or another, or you value that place, then there's certain things that really need to be done. And this is also a beautiful thing too, is that the things that you appreciate really bring that out and let them also lead you. Then you can turn it into beauty. It's not just a minute, well, let's get these things done so we can sit, or let's get these things done so that we can rest. It's just, no, this is the living now. Let's really appreciate that value and then take care of it in whatever way. Now, then the big challenge really is that, can I do this seamlessly? You know? Can I do this? So from when, you know, from this moment on, is that how can I practice that? Now, one of the things that happens internally during this process is that usually we have ideas of what we think practice is. Like for myself is that I thought it was around a feeling of, again, samadhi or concentration, like sitting concentration, a solidity. And so then I would try and overlay that in all aspects of living. In fact, at first, when I was working as a carpenter with my dad as an apprentice, I had it in my head that I should focus, you know, like Hakuin's somewhat saying here, to really work on my own inner koan, not necessarily a formal koan, wherever I went. And so I would work with him. And I'd be working with customers, and I wouldn't say a word. I'd just be building, and then you know, eventually my dad says, "Talk to the customers," you know. So that was part of the practice. Then I extended it into that, talk with the customers. There's always that communication that's really important, and that communication is not just words. It's just like, how do we interact with the people, the group, the environment, that wherever we find ourselves, you know. And then hopefully, it's like Maizumi Roshi said, you know, Zen practice is veering on the side of good. Is that, how can that occur wherever you are? Sometimes it's very difficult in that way. But again, this is the practice of fulfilling one's obligations. Now, this is also very important to see what your obligations are in terms of your own life. You know, some people will say to me, "Well, I can't practice because I'm married and I've got kids or I've got a job, etc." No, that is your practice. Those are your ingredients. So, how do I take that into practice, and then how do I set, say, the forms and the spirit that holds that practice while I work? And again, is that for each one of us, that really needs to be set into place first. Now, never overlook those forms. Those forms don't necessarily have to be Zen-like. They just have to be supportive of whatever your practice is. I remember that, you know, in the days before cell phones. You know, they would say, you know, just set a beeper on your watch, and do that every 15 minutes, and that may wake you up. That's a form. You know, you can like Shishin Roshi, when he was in training, both at the center and he was mainly in administration and doing computer stuff, and also at work he would have stickums on his desk, like not two. And so then it would change his mind from, say, an acquisitive mindset to, you know, how do I apply what is important to me into my work on a momentary basis. And then, you know, again, is this, if you really want this to occur, this practice, it will occur. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but if you start to apply it and take, you know, in this talk, you may get one thing that's helpful. And if you get one thing, that's a great thing, because then you can actually apply it and see if it actually works. And then the next thing is that then don't judge yourself too harshly in this, because again, that's just another game. Remember that basis of Samu, which is doing nothing, you know, and doing nothing also means don't bring in these things where I can't, I'm no good, etc. That's doing something. It's, you know, it's just doing something that's negative. Again, veer on the side of good. Practice. If you feel that you're not practicing well enough or hard enough, is that then put something in there that really supports you and your focus. And then in time, you'll begin to see the things that you're adding on top of your own life, and you'll see the basic wonder of your own being. Again, you know, the Buddha and the whole koan of Buddhism is around that Buddha's first statement. I, all beings, the great earth, are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness. You know, so really he's affirming all of life. He's affirming every single practitioner in that way. But then the koan is really, can I really make that into my life? You know? No matter what happens, there'll be easy times where you can say, you know, magnanimously, I can say that. And maybe amongst a whole bunch of friends, you go, wow, this is great. You know, yeah, the whole world is awakened in this way. And then I might be having an argument with someone or some difficulty. And then, but can I say the same thing? Then it's almost like saying it through clenched teeth, you know. Yeah, the whole world is like. No, but the thing is that we are a package as human beings. We come with all the human aspects, and the that aspect of practice is to really see into these things. You know, I could say that cliche, to see that they are vast and empty. But why? This is important, is to see that these are not permanent. These things come and go. All of these negative and positive things that we have as human beings. But the living itself doesn't. You know, and can we really appreciate that? You know, and I say this over and over, is I remember with Maizumi Roshi, for the first year or almost a year I was there with him, at the end of every talk he would say, appreciate your life. And I'd be going, yeah, that's all right for you. Yeah, that's all right. You're enlightened. And then after a while, it's like, well, why not? You know, these things don't have to be absolutes. You know, like something like, wow, my life is, no, I'm living. You know, this is an amazing thing, just to live, to see, hear, taste, touch, smell, think. This is an amazing thing. And then, again, as we begin to look at the ideas, notions, and beliefs that come in and cloud that vision, then we begin to see, yes, I'm introducing these things. They don't need to go off on automatic and color my living. You know? And that's really the work we need to do. So that in time is that even as we go through, you know, in Buddhism we have those six realms. So we have hells, hungry ghosts, animal realm, human realm, heavenly realm, and realm of fighting spirits, fighting gods. We go through all of these states of mind, but we see in it that basically they're all living or they are empty in themselves. And we're not stuck in those things. We don't need to be stuck in those for the rest of our lives. You know? But again, it's that the wearing out of these things is maybe the most difficult part of practice. But if you see that intrinsically, all beings are the wisdom and virtue of the awakened one to thusness, it makes things a little easier in that way. That's the basic realization. And all the work that we do, we see it goes towards the end of opening that up and making it clear. And then in time, we really see that practice is seamless. And that's one of the reasons that we can never really stand apart from it and look at it. You know, this is going on as breathing. And that's one of the reasons that we have breathing as a basic practice. It is going on as moving the body, like in Kinhin. There's no difference between Kinhin and working. You know, and in time is that all of these sort of criteria that we've set up as to why we can't begin to drop off. And we really see that basically practice is a seamless thing 24/7. And it will never match up to how we think it should be. And that's one of the problems. How many of you saw Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome? There's a few raising their hands. My favorite part in that movie is where they get Mad Max and they put him on a donkey backwards. And then on the donkey, there is a stick and there's a bottle of water in front of the donkey. And the donkey just keeps on chasing after that. But bottle of water, which he never will because it's attached to himself. And he goes way out into the desert until he dies. You know, but look at your own mind. You know, if you set up something that isn't congruent with reality, you're going to be chasing that for the rest of your life. That's why it's important to look at those views and for a period of time, put them on one side and then really appreciate the place that you are. And again, you know, in Buddhism, we have these two aspects, the not doing. And that's why it's so important to focus on that aspect, and because that's at the basis of everything. And then the work is actually looking at these things, looking at how we work, seeing that we're functioning without any kind of hindrance, and yet we add these criteria afterwards. It's like Master Dogen said, how could you be hindered by knots in wood and nodes in bamboo? And it's the same thing. How can you really be hindered by those ideas? But for some reason, as human beings, we just get stuck there. And then we just follow that. Now, then if you want to, say, add structure to practice in daily life, start to look at that. Again, we mentioned, like, you know, maybe setting your phone so that you get reminders. You might want to set something where a piece of Buddhist writing, or even any inspirational writing that you find is real, you look at it, say, every 15 minutes or so. Or whenever it works for you, as a reminder. You can say in many ways is that Zazen is a reminder in itself. You know, because quite often is that when you sit, you remember who you are as a basis. This is one of the things that the Buddha said towards the end of his life when he changed the Eightfold Path into the eight awarenesses of the enlightened enlightened person. He said that, I think it was like the fourth or the fifth, he said, remember who you are. And again, this is what meditation helps us to do. In our lives, we get so caught up in everything we have to do, the multitasking, the taking care of many different things. But even in one breath, you can come back, you know, this is life right now. This is exactly what practice is, and then carry on and move into it. And then through that is that then you don't get caught up in, well, life is going to be this way forever. which is another way that that our minds work as human beings. We universalize something. I can't do this now, so I'll never be able to do it. Rather than, okay, this is what's going on now. How do I practice in the midst of it? And then with that kind of mindset, it's like Hakuin and his koan thing, is that if you really set your mind to going through something, you will make inroads into it. It may never be perfect in the way that you would like it to be, but you will make inroads into it and do it over and over. And it's better than not doing it. Put it that way. It's just like, look at the things where you have to practice. If you practice something, usually you get better at it. You know, is if you do it over and over, it's like with Zazen. It's not necessarily you get better at Zazen, but you get better at being who you are without spoiling it with all of the ideas, notions, and beliefs that go along with it. Now, what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, have Zazen as the cornerstone or the main part of your practice, because if you can function freely in doing something as constrained as Zazen, as opened as Zazen, where there's nothing going on, then you can be really free in terms of how you live and function in your life. And when I say free there, I mean without the constraints of your own ideas, notions, and beliefs affecting your momentary existence. So I've talked for a little over 30 minutes. So if you have any questions or comments right now, we will address those. So practicing daily life, that's the... Okay, Russell.
Hello, let me start my video.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm...
You are.
Yeah. There's my face. I connected with this idea of practice being existing outside of sitting. Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, I asked my friend, you know, she expressed some interest in sitting. And then afterwards, a few sessions, she was, you know, she decided, she was like, meditation is not for me. My art is my meditation. And
yeah.
I got into this discussion with her, and I was, you know, it just struck me that when I asked her, I was like, well, what's there for you, you know, when you're in your art?
Yeah.
And she described it as, into my ear, it sounded like a lot of like dissection and analysis. And
yeah.
I was like you said, I wanted to be magnanimous and just say, yep, you know, that's what's there.
Yeah.
And it raised questions for me, you know, like, because when I'm sitting, I'm mostly sitting with what emotions are coming up for me. And so it just raised questions for me, like, yeah, what is that? What is the difference? What is that?
Yeah.
But,
yeah, and yet you have to remember, everyone has ways that they need to live as a human being, you know, and to really acknowledge that. Yes, meditation is not for everybody, even though anybody can take it up if it works for them. But you know, the thing is that like for myself, is I've got a good friend that I started practicing with when I first came to Zen Center of Los Angeles in 79, and he quit formal practice in the early 90s, but his practice continued as an art teacher, for instance. So we're talking about art, you know, and when I taught with him in freeform talk, I see how that practice has continued through art. But also I could mention people in many spheres of living where that inner work that they're doing manifests in other ways. But for me, it doesn't affect my life. I've had to do what I've had to do as a human being, you know, and then extend that in various ways. It's not that, you know, like some people say, well, meditation isn't for me, or it might even be worse, well, meditation doesn't work, you know, but I know it works for me. So that's why I do it. And I really don't care about what they think, you know, because I'm not them and I don't have their ingredients. But at the same time, I can appreciate the work that they do. You know,
yes. And I try to deeply appreciate her art. There's an egotistical part of me that when I wanted to go, nuh-uh.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, I have that part too, but quite often it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, the thing is, if it doesn't work, don't use it. You know, if it does work, then yeah, use it. You should be sitting. It's no good for you. Yeah.
Right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. All right. All right, Matt, you're on.
Hi, Roshi.
Hi.
I like how you were mentioning, or how you said that if you can do, you know, the zazen and it's a, you know, the constraint.
Yeah.
Right? But it's also the openness.
Yeah.
If you can do that, then you should be able to practice Zen in your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And and to do our practice in our everyday life. But when you're, or when I, since I'm talking about me in this state, but I think most people feel the same way. When I'm in emotional suffering,
yeah,
it's really hard to pull I don't want to say pull myself out of it, but to actually do what you were saying and appreciate.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is when it's happening to you, that's the teaching. And so the thing is enter into it and see what is being learned there. And this thing with emotion is part of it. If you allow yourself to feel it, is that you tend to process it quicker. That's part of the process of meditation. The Buddha felt things. Maizumi Roshi felt things. I feel things. I don't try and block those things. Those are part of the human condition. That's what the Buddha saw into. Now, you know, I mean, I know some people try and go, well, I don't like this, so let's move to something else. That's not the true teacher. It's directly go into it and see what can be learned from it. Because if you really learn from that, and that learning may be painful, is that you can help others.
Mm.
You know, it's like for me, when I went through breakups, it was very painful, but I continued. And in that, what I also learned was that was just part of my life. It was the part that was dominating at that point. But I never went, well, it's always going to be this way because of loss. No, there is loss. There is emotion. And it really feel that emotion. And then the interesting thing is with emotion, it drives me to deeper depths.
Okay.
You know, because most of the time in society is that you're given a description of what it is to be a human being. You should be happy. You should be wealthy. You should be good looking. you know, etc. And then when you don't fit into that box, it's a problem. But at the same time, is if you really allow your humanity in and really see what it is, then all of those things that you're afraid of within those emotions, you're no longer afraid of them. That's part of your life. And in that, there is tremendous depth in it. And
No, I was just going to say, so it's not just about how we let thoughts come and go, like when we're sitting.
No.
It's not about that.
No, and you know, this several things. I mean, recently I've been talking about it in more of an energetic term. You know, like for many people, it stays more on the head chakra with thought. For some people, then it goes down to the heart chakra. I'm using the word chakra, but it could be energy center. And so then it becomes allowing oneself and that's part of the deepening, is to allow ourselves to feel these things. And then in the feeling of them, because they're experienced, they don't dominate. They tend to dissipate in their own season. So this is better than this as a processor of emotion. You know, thought tends to perpetuate emotion. If you actually allow yourself to feel it, you move through it quicker. And then the third one is instinct or intuition. That's why we talk about hara breathing. It's not just to breathe low down and create a space between thought and experience. It's no, you're allowing instinct and intuition to dominate there. And then you can actually see the depths of thing, that vast and empty, and that permeates everything else. So you've got these three main levels. It's not we just stay on one of them. You explore all of them. And in that exploration is that you learn a lot about your own being that you didn't know at the beginning.
That's thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much in practice, it's endless, you know. And one of the things about seeing, you know, it's even seeing the vastness of our own emotions. Like when I'm sad, it fills the whole universe. You know, I mean, nobody can judge that. No, he's not. It only goes as far as Saturn. You know, no, it's just that you can't see the limits to that. And it's the same with love. You know, it's the same with fear when you really go into it. But then when the story is weeded away from it, you see the vastness of all emotion and being in itself. That's why in the Heart Sutra it says all dharmas or all teachings are forms of emptiness. It doesn't mean that there's nothing to them. It means they're vast. You can't put a size on them, etc. And we are that. And once we begin to see that, is that a lot of the fear around these things drops off.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very clear.
Thank you. That's what Maizumi Roshi would criticize me for. He says, way too clear. All right, Eli.
Good morning, Roshi.
Morning.
I got up really early this morning to help a friend clean out their garage.
Yeah.
And we were moving something really heavy. And we had a disagreement on how we were going to get the heavy object out
of
the small space out to the outside of the garage.
Sounds familiar.
And I got angry and I yelled at him.
Yeah.
And it hit me like a punch in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Because I realized I was getting angry at him because he wasn't allowing, because I was being such a good person to come help him work this morning. Yeah. And I wasn't practicing. I wasn't meditating. I foregoed my morning meditation. So how dare he, you know, get in the way of my practice? And then that's when it hit me. Like,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything. I don't know what's going on in his head. I went up to him. I said, I'm really sorry for that. I gave him a hug. You know.
Yeah.
You know, and he turned out to be right. We did it out that way.
Yeah.
And it was just like, that was my practice. I was there.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's the important thing is, you know, this is practice now. There's so much there on a momentary basis, teachings of light, sound, taste, touch that are coming in on a momentary basis. But for some reason, we think there should be something else. And that's, you know, that's that upside down thinking that the Buddha's talking about, is that we really don't appreciate what we have and the fullness of that teaching.
But I was able to catch it.
Yeah.
And I'm not good at that. I've never been good at that. But I was able to catch it and say, am I mad? Am I really angry? And I was like, why am I yelling?
Yeah. Well, this is it. You know, some space begins to develop, and then it doesn't just work on automatic. So it begins to work on all of your living as you put attention on that living. You know?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, Kyle.
Pay attention. It's valuable to hear you talk about work. As you know, I just started a new job, and so thinking about work a lot. And I had a comment and also a question. The first is, as you were talking, it became pretty clear to me that one of my biggest hindrances to really being in my work is wanting to do a good job and wanting to be really good at what I do. Mm-hmm. And sure, that's, you know, that's not unimportant, but it's not primary, you know. Yeah. I realize how that puts me out of the actual being and doing whatever it is that I do.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah.
So that was helpful. And then the question is, I was caught by you're describing how to sort of delegate and lead groups of people working, and I heard you describing folks who have sort of who've entered into a Zen center and are sort of willingly working in this way. But I'm thinking about
ways. Well, some are willing.
Well, yeah. Right. So that sort of gets to my question, where I realize, like, so how do I make that apply to, you know, leading groups of people at my job? Where
you find out. Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. The first thing is don't try and overlay somebody else's, although that might be helpful at the beginning, but then just see how, by looking at things and seeing how they work. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems, and again, my instincts are telling me that just the, you know, see who's there first. See what you have to work with. See who you have to work with and go from there, you know, which is a relatively new kind of thing to be able to trust myself to do, you know, because a lot of times my working out of things in my head before is in this sort of nervous anticipation of not doing well or not being able to do something.
Yeah.
And it really does get in, it really makes things harder and it makes things less. They get in the way, you know? Mm-hmm. So those are the two things that really hit me in hearing you talk. So thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, also remember is just remember why you're doing it and then don't lose sight of that.
Yeah. And sometimes finding a reason that I'm doing it that's other than making money. You know, it's like,
Well, at least you're being honest there, you know. I mean, you can be congruent with that, you know.
Totally. And I mean, that's never not there, but it's also, I have tried to sort of carve a path for myself that is invested in something that I think is important and does well for other people or serves other people well. So,
Great.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay.
See any other hands up? Yeah.
I think Sheila has her hand up.
Oh, Terry and Penny do here, so then we'll go to Sheila. Terry and Penny.
Morning, Roshi.
Good morning. So Penny's been beating you up again.
Actually, my dermatologist attacked me with a knife.
Okay, all right, yeah. Don't let him do that. Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned not being able to do something now, so thinking you'll never be able to do it.
Yeah.
I've had a lot of practice in knowing that's not true for myself.
I've done
a lot of things and thought, I can do them, and sometimes do them quite well, sometimes not so well, but I can do them. But so that's, you know, I'm past that, but so now what my practice tends to be, and maybe you could say something about this, is I can do it now, so I should always be able to do it.
Yeah.
But that could...
Well, I think you can probably answer that, you know. There's such a thing as impermanence.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Right, and it's, Yeah, right. You're exactly right. I can answer it, and that comes up often, and I'm dealing with it. But it's just, I just wanted to mention it because it's certainly another way to practice, another form of life.
Yeah.
Practicing, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me, is that I don't say I'll always be able to do this. I mean, I say that I'll always be able to be this. And then in terms of functioning is that, you know, it's like, you know, I have an injury now. I can't sit in a certain way at the center. And, and until that injury is right, I have to stand up. So I have to work around those things. And, you know, like, you know, is that you may injure your hand or your fingers. And when you have to do stuff, then you have to adjust and work around those things. It's not, you know, fixing the world. It's like, how do I work with what I've got? You know,
and for me, I find it takes, even though I'm certainly aware of it, know that, you know, I can't always do certain things I used to do, but it takes practice to come to to be completely at peace at that.
Well, and part of it is seeing, you know, what the alternatives are. You know, then I can't do it. Right. And then so my mind won't entertain that. My mind won't entertain that. I will do the best I possibly can to make sure that functions.
Right.
You know.
Right, and then I mean, there's all kinds of things to learn from that. I can do it differently. I can change. I mean, certainly everything's going to change. Mm-hmm. You know, from time to time. So I just wanted to say that, hear some feedback on that, and it's going fine to me.
Yeah,
sometimes I get a little upset.
And then the thing that you're not mentioning is that you can ask other people to help you, or you can ask other people to do it for you, and help them. You know, there's
Thank you. I've done that, but thanks for pointing it out that I can realize. Yeah, I've done that. And I can make sure. I can do that.
And then the other, you know, the other thing that's maybe more important is cutting to the quick is that, you know, I see, you know, I saw my parents and how they were towards the end of their life. And I could see that. And I see them as like pioneers in terms of my own life. And so is that now what that did for me was to help me to appreciate, you know, I can do these things now, so I might as well really enjoy them to the best of my ability, because later I may not be able to do them. So that there's a thing, I may or may not be able to do those things, so how do I enjoy this? And so then again, is that applies directly to the present. You know, now how can I take care of it, you know?
Oh, yeah, thank you. Maybe that's just good to hear that, because I think that covers part of the reason I really do enjoy so much.
And for me, you know, the other thing is that many people will look at old age, sickness, death as something to fear. But for me, it enhances my living knowing that those things are true. Those are truths.
Right. I mean, now when I'm driving on the freeway, especially when Benny's in the car, so I'm super aware of what a precious cargo there is in the car, and I'm super extra careful. Where, you know, maybe 20 years ago, I'm like, you cut me off, I'm going to speed up. Where now is, you know, this is more important right now to take care of this.
And definitely, you know, I mean, as human beings, and we see this in our own society, many people are run from fear now. But you can see the results of that. Again, this is learning vicariously. Do I want to live by fear? No, I don't want to live by fear. I want to live in a way that feels right with my inner ethic. What is in my bones, you know? And if I do that, then the fear is secondary. It's an indicator, but it's not the driver, you know, in that way.
Okay, good, yeah. Thank you.
And we had
Sheila. Yeah, she's unmuted.
Hi, Sheila. I just couldn't see your hand sign. That's all. Go on. Carry on.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, you're on.
All the good things.
Thank you.
Thank you, Roshi. Yeah, I just wanted to mention something that's just come up for me that's mm-hmm. kind of puzzling me, and I just wondered if you can say something, anything.
Yeah.
It's like I've just really started just allowing my perceptions to flow. You know, what mm-hmm. am I yeah. aware of just at this particular moment?
Yeah, yeah.
Letting it flow before, not before thought comes up, because thought comes up too quickly. You know, it's my tone. But then I was thinking, my eye is seeing all this stuff. My ear is hearing all this stuff. And my perception is picking one of those things.
There's
an infinite number of
perceptions
coming in.
Yeah.
And my consciousness is picking one.
Yeah.
What is it that's picking it?
Exactly.
If you see what I mean.
Exactly. Yeah, and the thing is, you know, is it that you know, you were saying my perception, my this or that, you're putting a label on it, but really does it have a possession or is it you know, a whole sense sphere that's there? You know, everybody has this
the whole sense.
Yeah. So you don't really need to put a, you know, have somebody watching it occur. Be the watcher itself, the one that's experiencing that. You know, but if it's really important for you, really have a look and see who that is. And that will that will teach you a lot about your own consciousness. I've never been able to catch that one. I've never been able to hold that one. That one cannot be caught. It's slippery. You know, and if you allow your consciousness to function seamlessly, it will pick up on things. It's just how we are as human beings. It's in our DNA. You know, it's like last night I was just going off to sleep, and then I could hear a mountain lion outside the house. And so my attention went on the mountain lion, and then the mountain lion went away, and then there was a few thoughts around it, and then I went off to sleep. It's just that we pick up on things in our environment that are important to us in one way or another, and then they just go back into the sphere of like more like container consciousness. And if we allow that to occur, is that we're naturally taken care of as human beings. But, you know, just look at your own consciousness. You know, is that whatever's dominant will come in. Like this morning, I was sitting, and then somebody came into the center early that we didn't know about. And so then my attention went there. And the next thing I noticed then was that woke the ravens up, and the ravens started. And so my attention went there. And then I focused on Paul, who was talking with, and it went back there. Then the mind naturally goes from one thing to another. It picks up information, but it doesn't pick up every single thing because it's so much. It just picks up on those things that are either interesting, could give us food, look good, you know. But that's what our mind does. You don't need to hold on to it in any way. Is let that occur.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like you're saying, don't be afraid of thought. You know, thought's just part of the process. But at the same time, be very wary. Don't let it run the show.
No, right. Yeah.
Where are you talking from?
London.
Oh, in London. Yeah. I got the accent, but I didn't know if you were in this country or in England. Yeah.
No, I'm in London.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you, actually.
Thank you. Okay, we're just about the end, so if anybody's got something just before we finish, we can do. All right. Oh, Mike, you have a question or something?
No.
No, Mike, you're
Is he talking?
Yeah, you're muted, so I can't hear you.
How's that?
Yeah, that's better. I can hear you now. Yeah.
Okay. You know, your comment about one of the fellows having not two stickers, having a little timer on your watch that would bring you back every 15 minutes or so. I mean, it seems to me there could be a pitfall there of trying to be
Life is full of pitfalls. If it's not for you, don't do it. If you find it's useful, use it.
Right.
Yeah. But all I'm saying is try something. you know? But it's got to be yours, you know?
Well, can you get to the point where, you know, I'm just tired of trying something?
Well, don't.
I just be. Want to be here.
Yeah.
That's it. Right?
Yeah. Then be. And then don't let anything get in the way. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you. It's good seeing you and hearing you.
Nice to see you as well.
Yeah. All right. Right, guys. So we're open for conversation.